AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today. Matt Hunter, is it going to storm tonight?
I don't know. It's possible.
It kind of looks like it's going to. I mean, it's, it's getting windy out there. I can see some heavier duty or clouds coming in from the west there. So I think that, just be careful out there. Might be a little bit of something like that coming up a little bit later on. I'll check the weather forecast a little bit later. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. By the way, I want to give a good salute out to the United States Postal Service. And this is no joke. When Republicans start throwing out the ideas of getting rid of stuff like food stamps, there's an ignorance which is undeniable. I mean, really is. I mean, it's a program. I mean, Tim Walz came on the show when he was a congressman, and he gave the greatest response ever. He says, even if you don't, if you have no compassion in your heart and no feeling about a higher spirit, about feeding hungry people, the reality is food programs spend money in our American farmers, and they keep, they help them by buying their product and then using it to feed the hungry. For goodness sakes, is there a bad element to that program? Not at all. He's in exactly right. And over the years, you have seen the Republicans argue about stuff like, getting rid of libraries. How dare you have libraries? You're wasting my taxpayer dollar letting people read. And stuff like that. And they've gone after things. They've gone after the Postal Service. And the thing which is funny is that Republicans convince themselves, and I got a great example of this. They convince themselves they know what the truth is. I got a great example coming up in just a moment of this. When the reality is they all of a sudden stopped and realized. It was like all of a sudden they said to themselves, wait a minute, we're going to get rid of the Postal Service. And they actually almost did. Under W, they almost got rid of the Postal Service. And then all of a sudden someone said, wait a minute here. UPS and FedEx aren't going to do daily mail delivery out until middle of nowhere, Nebraska? We can't get rid of the Postal Service. And it was at that moment when all of a sudden they realized they had been so successful at killing the program, where they basically had their hands around the U.S. Postal System's throat and they were drowning it in the water. All of a sudden they realized, whoa, I'm killing this person. And it was only at that point that they came back up. And the reason why I am proud, not only are they hard workers over there, great union jobs, they deal with tough weather, they deal with all these things. They're still one of the most affordable things out there. So when we had a bunch of family get together up north earlier this summer, and there were some leftover things from my father who'd passed away earlier this year, and they were meant to go to my brother Jim. Well, he flew out here. He lives in Maine, and he flew out here. And he basically said, I can't take the stuff back. And I have no idea why these were in his box of things, but some very stunning pumps, very nice heels, very, yeah. Okay. Very stiletto. I think they're actually for his daughter, my niece, who is 30, something like that, and very stylish. But needless to say, there's a bunch of stuff that he didn't want to necessarily take on the plane. I take it to the Postal Service. I put it in one of those boxes. Affordable. Just shipped. Gone. Done. I'm not paying $50. And God, I've worked for companies that did shipping. Can I tell you how annoying it is to have either UPS or FedEx destroy $1,000 worth of product and then look at you and say, well, you shouldn't have trusted us with the product. That's you being stupid. You're like, Jesus. There is nothing greater than that. Hey, you guys ruined our product. Well, I guess it sucks to be us, doesn't it? And it sucks to be you, too. Well, we all suck together, then. A big salute to the Postal Service. I don't give you enough credit. And by the way, the stamp selection nowadays, solid endeavor. I mean, we have to take and look at the Postal Service, because the Postal Service, as much as people like to lament the government, the Postal Service is a prime example of government that works, and it works well. In my lifetime, including Christmas cards and all these things, I've probably had maybe two or three letters I have mailed not get to their destination. That's it. And in that is the reason why people look at government's wasting money. Government works if it is done right. And the Postal Service is a great example of that. Mark is in Minneapolis. He's married to a postal worker. Hi, Mark. Oh, you were?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, well, I was.
Welcome to the show, Mark.
Yeah, but I know the history of it, and I'm friends with a lot of postal workers, including my Minnehaha station in Longfellow neighborhood. And we talk about it, that no other company, entity, or public institution has to be responsible for health care benefits into the future. I mean, they basically, this is what Congress and Republicans threw on them. You know, basically, they choked the Postal Service, and yet they're still staying afloat, even though they're having to carry that albatross around their neck. And you can check it out. It's online. It's cool. Oh. It's that's why they struggle, and now they're trying to kill them again. They try every effort to kill it, but... You know, as Ben Franklin said, it's one of the best services we ever did.
Well,
we ever will have.
And that was, and Mark, when you got, and thank you, Mark, I appreciate the phone call. And it, when you look at what they did, is they basically demanded that the Postal Service fund 75 years of retirement benefits, 75 years of retirement benefits in advance. They could put this mandate on the Postal Service because it was a government entity. They did. And so at the time they put it into place, they were putting in place the demand that they had to fund retirement benefits for people who hadn't been born yet. Now, there were two reasons why they did this. One, they wanted to try to bankrupt this because then they could ship all the overnight and express shipping from the Postal Service to FedEx and UPS and these private companies and basically, you know, allow them to take over. Because one of the reasons why they have to, the private companies have to keep their costs low is because of the United States Postal Service. The other reason is that they still, the Republicans dream of the day that they can basically negate on the retirement benefits for 75 years for postal workers, take that money and give it into a massive tax break to the wealthiest people in this country. And let's be honest, that's the way, that's their modus operandi. That is who they are. So that's kind of what happened. But it was when they got ready to get rid of them, I mean, they were talking about getting rid of the overnight express, and they said, well, then you might as well just shut down the Postal Service because it's not going to make any money. And that was at that point they all of a sudden realized, wait a minute here. Where am I going to get my mailers to my constituents? Well, at $20 a pop, you can send them through FedEx, but, you know, they got, what, about a 40% failure rate, or I don't know what exactly it is. I can remember this. Almost every day I shipped, I had one package that disappeared or came back soaking wet. Hey, guess what? This sweated. Did it? Did it sweat or did you leave it in a puddle? It's one of the two. We think it sweated. Did it? Okay. Oh, I think that was UPS. But that was just my personal experience.
Yeah, I just wish more people realized that. Like, we could have nice things in this country, but we make decisions to not have things in the public interest.
And can we do things more cost effectively? Of course we can. But the idea that we are just trimming fat from budgets. No, fat, we're shaving bone at this point. And if we don't start infusing money back into these systems, you're going to have a country that looks far more like 1880 than it does like, you know, 2020. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. By the way, I want to mention Tommy Myrick is going to be joining us a little bit later on. We had a very interesting setup coming up here. It's a screening of a movie, a newly restored African-American classic film called Cane River that is going on over at, this is at the Walker. It's been put together by the Independent Feature Project, Tommy was the star of this movie. It's a phenomenal story. A really interesting story, and I highly encourage you to go catch this. Once again, it's going to be tomorrow night, the 26th at 7 p.m. over at the Walker. We'll talk to her about the film. We'll talk to her as well about the restoration of the film when we get the chance. Hunter, I want to play something. As I mentioned earlier, the idea that the Republicans they convince themselves of a truth and they have no idea of the reality because they have created a system where the reality does not matter. It's their opinion gets validated. And every once in a while when they step out, you know why Meghan McCain looks so stressed all the time on The View? The reason why is because she is not in an insulated bubble. She is in a studio where people bring facts and reality to the discussion, and she is constantly outmatched because she brings in these Sean Hannity Fox News talking points. and she immediately gets trounced. Now, this is Representative Adam Schiff, who yesterday was talking to Robert Mueller. He agreed to be on The View today. We're going to start this. This is Meghan McCain comes in here in just a second to try to get him with a gotcha question. And the smackdown she's about to receive is pretty spectacular. Here you go.
Now, you have a smoking gun of evidence of collusion. Your quote is ample evidence of collusion. You said that. But Robert Mueller and his investigation found that there was no collusion. So can you share with us right here, right now, on The View, the evidence that you have and explain why Mueller was wrong yesterday?
Well, first of all, Mueller wasn't wrong. Mueller started out by saying we didn't address the issue of collusion. So those who are saying no collusion,
well, what's your evidence?
Just wrong.
You've been saying that on TV
yes.
for years.
Well, I will tell you, and I've also been saying, as you know, that the evidence is in plain sight, not hidden anywhere. And we went through that evidence. The Russians offered dirt on Hillary Clinton in writing. And sent it to Don Jr. And Don Jr.'s response was in writing and said, as for your offer of foreign illegal help, I would love it. He accepted the offer. They set up a overt act in furtherance of that, the secret meeting at Trump Tower, and they lied about it. You have an offer of illegal help. You have the acceptance of that offer. You have an overt act in furtherance of that conspiracy. That is, I think, by any rational American's expectation, the personification of collusion. Now, Bob Mueller had a different question he needed to analyze, which is, can I prove each of the elements of the crime of conspiracy beyond a reasonable doubt? And as you know, well before the Mueller report, I was pointing out to the public, there's a difference between what we understand as collusion and whether you can prove all the elements of crime.
So would you consider yesterday a big win for Democrats? Would you consider yesterday a big win for Democrats?
I would consider it a win for the American people that they got to hear from the person who did the investigation. They got to hear, unfiltered by anybody else, what he found. For the former director of the FBI and the special counsel to say, effectively, the president acted immorally, unethically, unpatriotically, and likely in a criminal fashion, the American people needed to hear. If you're measuring whether this is a success in terms of whether it brings us closer to impeachment or not, that was not my object with wanting him to come in. My object was to find out what work did you do, what conclusions did you reach, and what work do we need to do to follow up on counterintelligence or compromise information to protect the country.
Chairman, has it brought you closer to an impeachment?
We're going to step on in here because at that point it goes away. But Meghan McCain, once again, and by the way, there's a very telling line she has there at the end when she says, did the Democrats win? I have told you before, the modern Republican, they hate Democrats more than they love their well-being, their religion, their quality of life, their health care, their kids. They hate Democrats that much. And so what she was doing when he came back and smacked her so bad with the facts was saying, trying to go back to that, well, was it a win for the Democrats? And what that is if he says yes, which he didn't, he basically said it was a win for the American people, which even infuriated her more. That is dog whistle code for Republicans, which says, well, it was a win for Democrats, so it's a loss for us. So we hate Mueller, and we hate Schiff, and we hate the Democrats, because that was what the whole point was. That line at the end was an attempt by her to basically try to reclaim some sort of argument. And good on the Democrats, because the Democrats have done what they should have done from the beginning. This isn't about Republican or Democrat. This is about what is pro-America or anti-America, if I can borrow a statement from Michelle Bachmann. What is pro-America or what is anti-America? What is anti-America is working hand in hand with a foreign government to try to win an election, as they are and themselves, and we all knew it at the time, trying to infiltrate our election process. What Schiff just said there, and in case there's a lot of Republicans that just do not want to realize this, the Russians in writing offered help. Donald Trump Jr. in writing responded, sure, we'd love help. The entire Trump campaign was geared around Russians releasing emails through WikiLeaks. And there is that one last bombshell with Rick Gates, which I think is being held back because of the Roger Stone, prosecution right now. But the reality is that This is anti-America. Think about this for a second. I wrote this earlier today, and I really been thinking about it. Imagine what all these freaking idiot QAnon, racist bigots, far-right anti-Christian Christians, these you know, the militia types, these Republicans, the Republicans themselves. Imagine what their reaction would be if the same evidence existed on a Democratic candidate working, whether knowledgeably or unknowledgeably, with a foreign government to win an election. They would be, there would be gunfire in the streets. There would be gunfire in the streets. They would be burning everything down. They would be saying we have to start from the beginning. But the modern Republican, when you tell them, my God, and you heard the news at the top of the hour, the Russians, we now know the Russians were trying to infiltrate the Illinois voting system. And the first question a Republican will ask is, well, who are they trying to vote for? Because if they were voting for Republicans, why are you so against? They just were making their own voice heard. They're just trying to, they're just cosplaying an American in a voting election system at that point, Matt. But if they were voting for a Democrat, like, ooh, how dare they? And mark my word, if we do not, you know, tap this down and stop this immediately and identify it as they should, which is anti-American. It is anti-American to take help from a foreign country. As a matter of fact, it's interesting. Back in 2015, in case you forgot this little nugget, James O'Keefe, you remember that guy? He tried to trick up the Clinton campaign by sending apparently some Canadian to a donation booth to buy swag. And they said, I'm sorry, we can't take your money. You're Canadian. To which then all of a sudden, out of the blue, here comes a James O'Keefe related reporter who said, hey, Canadian person, I'll take your, and did this very loudly in front of them, said, I'll take your money and I'll give it to them and then I'll give you the swag. And they acted as if, well, no, that's that you violated the law. Well, putting aside the fact that this clearly was some sort of setup, the reality is, no, they didn't, because the minute they gave the money to the American then take that money and made a donation. And they can't say that they did so through some sort of evil scheme. No, they gave the money to the American gave them the money and said, here's your gear. And they tried to make it out to, look, ooh, a Canadian's trying to influence and help out the Trump or the Clinton campaign. That was before Russia. Have you noticed that no one complains about that stuff now? This is an ugly reality, and if you didn't hear Robert Mueller yesterday state, the Russians are trying to interfere in our elections as we speak. If we do not do something to stop this and do a full investigation, because I got some serious damn questions about Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham at this point. If we don't do a full investigation into these people and find out what the hell's been going on, well, we're all going to be dumb like Meghan McCain. Let's just be honest. 952-946-6205. Gary, Randy, hold on. Your call's in a little bit. And once again, coming up a little bit later on, Tommy Myrick is going to join us to talk about the movie Cane River over at The Walker. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
There goes the law.
Hello, humans. Ellie Krug with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. This week, I share about Vera Connolly, an investigative journalist from the 1920s to 50s. I call her the Rachel Maddow of her time. Then, the big interview is with Scott Harold of Rock the Cause, an idealist in the truest sense. You will not want to miss his interview. Ellie 2.0 Radio, engaging and real on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association and Powderhorn Park are thrilled to invite you to the Powderhorn Art Fair. Shop hundreds of local and regional artists on serene Powderhorn Lake. Taste foods from local food trucks and enjoy exploring the Powderhorn community. Considered the best regionally juried art fair for nearly three decades, it takes place right in South Minneapolis in picture-perfect Powderhorn Park. The Powderhorn Park Art Fair begins Saturday, August 3rd and runs through Sunday, August 4th. Join the fun from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The success of the art fair comes from Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association's long-standing collaboration with the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board, and a portion of the proceeds support youth programming at Powderhorn Park. There'll be over 200 artists, 20 food trucks, and great fun at Powderhorn Park. The Powderhorn Park Art Fair begins Saturday, August 3rd and runs through Sunday, August 4th. For more information on the art fair, go to ppna.org. That's ppna.org.
Auto Technical needs your help to keep our transportation program going. Social agencies like Workforce Training Center, Tubman Shelter, they rely on our mission of providing transportation to families in need. Donations of vehicles are down 80% because of the new tax laws. We really need vehicle donations to continue our mission. Help us, please. Give a call to Richard at 612-919-5526, autotechnical.org.
Hi, friends. I've been talking to you about Minnesota's first green cemetery, Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's an entirely new way of looking at our last earthly step. Burials are designed to have as little impact on the environment as possible. For many of us, a continuation of the commitment we made during our lifetimes. Let me suggest you go to the website, mngreengraves.com. Explore what it is. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's a lovely place, a peaceful place. Minnesota's first green cemetery.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Let's run the phone calls if we could here. Gary is in Minneapolis. Gary, thanks for holding. Welcome on in.
Yeah, well, Matt, I'd like to make a few statements here. You know, the founders, well, you wrote, we the people, I thought they meant we the people, not we the billionaires or I the billionaire. But, you know, these millionaires, they got to be billionaires by not paying their taxes, shifting them to us, and then by sending the corporations over to countries that have to pay minimum wages. And then also, what was the other thing? They killed the unions, too. That was a big thing. And then they privatized everything at our expense, like the public schools. You got Betsy DeVos. You got her brother privatizing the military. You got Dick Cheney with Halliburton. And you got the private voting machines. They're privatizing everything and screwing them all up.
Well, Gary, no, and you're exactly right. They are. That's the whole goal, is to basically, you know, they look at a private institution getting, a government institution doing things effectively as a massive failure. And the reason why is because their mentality is, wait a minute here, that's money we could be giving to a private citizen. And that's kind of the way they think about things. Randy is in St. Cloud. Let's bring Randy on in. Welcome on in, Randy.
Yeah, thanks. You know, on your channels, you have the Ralph Nader Radio Hour. And a couple of months ago, he did a show called The Military Industrial Virus, where he interviewed Andrew Colburn from The Atlantic.
Okay.
And it was just, it was an unbelievable show. But they talked about that the military, every department in the government is supposed to have an audit. This was set up, like, I think during Reagan, but it might have been during Bush 1, that every department's supposed to have an audit. And they kept putting it off on the military for 25 or however many years, and they finally tried to do it in 2016. They spent $400 million, and they couldn't do it. They said there's not, the information isn't available to do a full audit.
Well, and I can say this, Randy, from my personal experience when I was in the military, I used to know guys in the military that said, that there's no doubt. I mean, it used to actually be better that if you needed some hammers, you went down to the local guy and you got hammers. This idea that you had to go through someone else. Yeah, on government contracts, you know, there's a lot of money that disappears. There's a lot of money that goes into the military's budget that just disappears. And that is just a reality. It really is. And heck, you know, I'd like to be able to deal with that. I mean, I love that to be our biggest problem in this country right now. I would. The compromised state of our government is a different thing. Hey, by the way, speaking of elections, Danielle Stella, have you heard of Danielle Stella there, Hunter?
I don't believe so.
She is the challenger to Ilhan Omar.
I have. I was going to talk with her.
You were going to talk with her?
No, I was going to try and have a conversation. I was curious.
Did you not?
I never reached out, but I was thinking about it.
Her campaign website describes her as a Republican and a special education needs professional who did not hold aspirations to run for political office, but yet here we are. However, as a result of a lack of honorable representation in the Minnesota 5th Congressional District, she believes it is her duty and privilege to stand up and speak for the forgotten American citizen in the district and throughout the state. Her list of positions includes steadfast support of President Trump, protecting conservative voices from suppression on platforms like Twitter, bolstering the right to bear arms, and more, okay? And then making sure choice starts in the bedroom. No. We're going to open up some buffets, it looks like. Come on, honey. It's time for the OCB. it's a chocolate fountain. Choice starts in the bedroom. Well, then. You may not have heard of Stella unless you keep an eye on the far right corners of the internet, where her campaign made small splash in June, not because of sentiments she's tweeting necessarily, though her lengthy tweets ranging from Omar have certainly turned a few heads, but because of some subtext to her post. She tags her post WWG1WGA, where we go one, we go all. This is the motto for the internet conspiracy group QAnon. Ooh. QAnonymous. It would, by the way, and yeah, if you haven't heard about QAnon, these are the guys that make up everything. It's supposedly Q is supposed to be this high-level government official who's talking anonymously online. And everything he says, or her says, or they say, is hilarious because it makes no sense. But needless to say, people who want to believe the worst, because, I can't be supporting Donald Trump if I'm a good Christian unless the other side are demon people. You know, that's kind of the mentality.
It's almost becoming like a religion.
It is.
They put so much faith into it.
Because it's exactly what I just said. For them, they have to turn the Democrats into Pol Pot and Hitler and Caligula and vampires and brain-eating zombies and aliens from outer space combined times 10, and they're still 10 times worse than that, because that's the only way a Christian could look at Donald Trump and say, I'm with him. Oh, yes. She seems to be a QAnon spotter. That's just hilarious. City Pages has a full story on her. I'll get that posted up online, but she's so upset. I got news for you. In the 5th District, I don't know if you... Can we call that race now?
We can.
Can we? We got a call in here on the 2020 race for the 5th District. Ilhan Omar has won another term in office. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Here's six great reasons to join Sick of Salmon Shares. Truly wild, hook and line caught Alaskan fish the way it was meant to be. Community focused, producer owned by our Alaskan fishing families. Exceptional quality, sashimi grade artisan caught fish. Sustainable and traceable, back to the exact boat and fisherman who caught it. Convenient and affordable, delivered directly to your home with delicious recipes and a variety of membership levels, all 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Learn more at sitkasalmonshares.com and use code AM950 when you join.
You know what's cool? Summer is cool. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning also thinks it's cool too. Well, be cool in the summer. That's why Standard is giving you $900 in savings on a ductless unit or air conditioning system now through the end of July. Just imagine having reliable cooling comfort all summer long for years to come. So contact Standard or go to standardheatingdeals.com to learn how you can save $900 on a new AC system. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, comfort you deserve.
Hi, this is Evelyn. Dad, don't make me do what you made Charlie do.
You want to drive, right?
Fine. My dad is cooler than all YouTube and Instagram celebrities combined. Matt McNeil.
That's lit.
Whatever. I'm getting ready to start my behind-the-wheel driver's training, and my dad says the only vehicles he wants me learning in are Toyotas. Fine with me, because I love them too.
The vehicles I trust for my young children are the vehicles I trust for their own driving adventure. It's safety and security you can't beat. Test drive a fantastic Toyota today at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 west of the downtown in Golden Valley.
Crazy about pets? We are too. The Pet Connection Show is a great venue for fun, informative, and creative conversations about pets. Join myself, Kathy Menard, and Dr. Nicole Parole along with guests who are leaders in the dynamic and growing pet industry, as we discuss healthcare, relationships, behaviors, and even political issues as they relate to our pets. So come, sit, stay for the Pet Connection Show, Sundays 11 a.m. to noon on AM 950 Radio, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
There it is. Choice begins in the bedroom. It feels like I'm watching an episode of Fleabag. Yeah. Oh. Well, I'm awake. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Programming here brought to you by EatLocalMinnesota.com. Restaurant of the week is Nightingale. Fantastic place. If you've not been out there, their sharing plates are just top-notch. Great vegetarian options out there, too. Make sure you stop on by and enjoy their wares there, 2551 Lindale Avenue, south of Minneapolis. It is Nightingale, the EatLocalMinnesota.com restaurant of the week. Once again, coming up here in just a bit, Tommy Myrick is going to join us. She is the founder of Voices in the Dark and, of course, the repertory down in New Orleans. And she was an actress in a movie called Cane River, which is an amazing story, and it's definitely very much worth talking about it. But I want to get into, once again, the atrocities of the Trump administration. And we have to acknowledge them. 18-year-old born in Texas was released from an Immigration Customs Enforcement detention on Tuesday after being wrongly held for more than 3 weeks, his attorney said. Francisco Irwin Galicia, a high school student from Edinburgh, Texas, has been held in custody first by Customs and Border Protection, then by ICE, since late June, his attorney said. In a joint statement released on Wednesday, ICE and CBP confirmed Galicia was released but said that an investigation remains ongoing. Generally, situations including conflicting reports from the individual and multiple birth certificates can and should be taken more time to verify, the statement read. While we continue to research the facts of the situation, the individual has been released. By the way, and here's the story. As they try to make this seem like, oh, there's a big mystery here about what happened. Galicia was traveling across Texas for a college soccer tryout with his younger brother. Now, once again, this is an American citizen. He was with his younger brother and friends on June 27th when he was taken into custody at a Border Patrol checkpoint, his attorney said. Claudia Gallen is his attorney. Gallen said Galicia had proper identification on him, including a wallet-sized Texas birth certificate, a Texas identification card, and a Social Security card. Customs and Border Patrol agents grew suspicious when they discovered that Galicia's 17-year-old brother, who was born in Mexico, didn't have any legal status to be in the United States, but being 17... During a deeper probe, CBD discovered that Galicia had a U.S. tourist visa that his mother, who is undocumented, took out for him when he was a child. Glenn said Galicia was born in a Dallas hospital, however, glancing, Galicia's mother used a different name on his birth certificate and that he was born in Mexico because of her immigration status. This name change meant she wasn't able to request a U.S. passport for him. She applied for a tourist visa with inaccurate information so Galicia could travel between Mexico and the U.S. to visit family. He's been here all his entire life. But when Border Patrol checked his documents, they didn't believe that they were real. They just kept telling him they were fake. So he kept showing him documents. Once again, if I was to get pulled over by someone and I went into my wallet and I pulled out my driver's license and I showed it to the individual and I said, see, big white guy, would they say, I'm sorry, Mr. McNeil, I'm not buying this if McNeil is your real name? No. Why did they do this? You look foreigner. That's why you look for it. And by the way, just a quick side note, something else I pointed out there today. You wonder how a government law enforcement agency goes rogue and becomes kind of this hired thug kind of group. Well, let me explain what happens. First, you get an organization, I don't know, like Customs and Border Patrol and ICE, and you basically give them authoritarian power to basically treat other human beings as horribly as they can. And when, you know, it looks like, you know, someone's going to lose an election, they look at you and say, well, if we lose this election, guess what? You're going to jail because you committed crimes. And then all of a sudden these people are like, that's right, we did commit crimes. They told us to commit crimes, but we committed crimes. That's how you get stuff like brown shirts or ICE. I didn't imagine this could happen. Now I'm sad that I'm not with my family, he told the publication on a phone interview from South McAllen, Texas. He has been released now, though. Galicia was detained in the South Texas Detention Center in Pearsall. Speaking with the Morning News following the release, Galicia described the harrowing conditions he endured there. He said he lost 26 pounds during his detention because officers didn't provide sufficient food. Gleasy also said he wasn't allowed to take a shower. They slept on the floor alongside 60 other men in an overcrowded holding area. Some of the men, he said, slept on the floor in the restroom because of lack of space. It was inhumane. Once again, I want to make sure we understand this. They weren't allowed to shower. They weren't given enough food. They were kept on the floor. It's a shame these people aren't dogs, because we actually have rules in this country about treating dogs this poorly. Let's just be honest. It was inhumane how they treated us. It got to a point where Israeli decided deportation paper just so I won't be suffering there anymore. And that's what their point is they're torturing these people. We have American citizens running concentration camps at our borders to try to make conditions so bad that people leave voluntarily. And yet they still don't. What should tell you about the conditions they're trying to flee? I'm glad this kid's out, and undeniably, but it's not working out so positively in all cases. And this is America right now. After a 16-year-old Guatemalan boy died in Border Patrol custody in May, officials gave a basic account of what had happened. Carlos Gregorio Hernandez Vasquez crossed the border alone near West Laco on May 13th, was held at a processing center for unaccompanied minors in nearby McAllen for 6 days until falling ill on May 19th. That day, a nurse practitioner found that he had a 103-degree fever, tested positive for the flu. He was prescribed Tamiflu and transferred to the Border Patrol station in West Laco. Hernandez died the next morning. Now, an autopsy report obtained by the Texas Monthly provides new details about the death of Hernandez, the fifth Guatemalan child to die since December after being taken into Border Patrol custody, conducted by Dr. Norma Jean Farley, a contract forensic pathologist for Hidalgo County. The autopsy concludes that Hernandez succumbed to the flu, complicated by pneumonia and sepsis, on or near a toilet in the South Texas Border Patrol cell. He was fed at 2 a.m. Oh, that's a convenient dinner time, isn't it? 2 a.m. May 20th, agents reportedly checked on him every hour according to the autopsy, but sometime later in a video that Farley apparently reviewed, Hernandez is seen lying on the floor, vomiting on the floor, and walks over to the commode where he sits and later lies back and dies. The exact time of Hernandez's collapse is not known because the report notes, without explanation, the time on the video is incorrect. Regardless, the boy was found at 6 a.m. the same morning and declared dead 12 minutes later. The circumstances of Hernandez's death strengthened the criticism of Border Patrol's handling of sick children. The agency is required to transfer unaccompanied children to the Office of Refugee Resettlement within 72 hours, but officials have acknowledged reportedly falling to meet the requirement this year, including in Hernandez's case. Hernandez was also never taken to a hospital despite the apparent seriousness of his illness and the fact that the flu has claimed the lives of two other Guatemalan children in the Border Patrol custody in the last 6 months. Yeah. We saw the Robert Mueller stuff yesterday. We saw that, indeed, the Trump campaign has worked with the Russians. We did see that the Trump himself is guilty of obstruction of justice. It was interesting. I had a lot of people saying, see nothing. I said, yeah, outside, you missed that little point about they could charge him with a crime after he's out of office. That shut up a lot of Republicans real quick. The reality is we have a crisis which has already irreparably damaged the United States beyond the other things we have done in the history of this country. I mean, these concentration camps on our borders, for God's sakes, and these sick, twisted people that are running these places. No showers, no food. You're sick. They let a sick person. What is a sick person doing on the floor by a toilet in the first place? Like that's some sort of, here we have a video of him. Look, and he's right there next to the commode. I don't know how he got sick. We have kids dying at an incredibly tragic rate in these concentration camps. And the reality is, unless we start demanding these places get shut down, I mean, there's, I can guarantee you this. Pray with me that in 2020, that this country sees a new leader. Because and I guarantee you, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be preparing their speech of, I was only following orders. And you know what? There are sometimes you got to let bygones be bygones, and there are sometimes you have to apply the law to the harshest extent. And these human beings treating other human beings in this manner deserves justice. This is unconscionable what this country is doing under the stars and stripes of this country. I just, ugh. Just story after story every day. I remember when we used to have light news days. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll change it up when we come on back. Cane River, a lost classic, has been restored. The Walker has got it. It's showing it tomorrow night. We're going to talk to one of the stars from that movie when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Scott Peterson with the Minnesota News Network, inviting you to join us for Minnesota Matters, a weekly program covering everything that matters in the North Star State. This week, controversy over race after President Trump's tweets addressing Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar and three other congresswomen of color, a chaotic week at the State Department of Human Services, and Minnesota's connection to the Apollo 11 moon landing. Tune us in right here or at MinnesotaNewsNetwork.com.
Sunday mornings at 6:30 on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambaud from Chambaud Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office. We always offer a free exam and x-rays for new patients because we believe you shouldn't have to pay to find out what's wrong with your teeth. Call today. We're open early and late and Saturdays to fit your schedule. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
Hi, Matt McNeil for Rudy Luther Toyota. For your next vehicle purchase, there are many reasons to choose Rudy Luther. First, their top-notch staff from top to bottom is wonderful, friendly, and always ready to help. Another, the Luther Advantage Card. With every new and used vehicle purchase, you'll get 3 years of 10 cents off per gallon of gas at holiday station stores, as well as discounted car washes. The Luther Advantage Card keeps you happy in your Rudy Luther vehicle. Find out more at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then,
hey!
The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Catch New Beginnings with Freddie Bell, Saturdays at 11 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show here. When it debuted in 1982, Cane River was already a rarity, a drama by an independent black filmmaker financed by wealthy black patrons and dealing with race issues untouched by mainstream cinema. Richard Pryor even had to try to take it to Hollywood. Since that movie debuted, it's disappeared. A fascinating story about the movie, and it has now reappeared and is going to be showing over at the Walker coming up here tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Joining us right now to talk about the film, Tommy Myrick. She's a native of New Orleans. She is also the founder of Voices in the Dark, a theater group down there, a repertory down there, and she was a star in Cane River when it first came on out, and she's here to talk about the restoration and the re-release of the movie. Hi, Tommy.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing very well. You are a great guest. My goodness. I could talk to you about five or six different things for about 2 hours. You've got an amazing career.
Well, yes, I've been very blessed that way, you know? But acting was never my forte. It was always something that other people wanted me to do. but not something I wanted to do. I always wanted to be a director and a producer, which is what I am now, but there we go.
Well, you came out of Xavier University, and this I'm presuming was in the early 80s, and you then went and you were offered the role in Cane River. Talk a little bit about the film, because as I described there, it's a really unique film made locally there in Louisiana, it sounds like, and it did present something that was not being shown on movie theaters in this country.
Well, you know, actually, it's a story within a story within a story. So let's just start from the beginning. Horace Jenkins, who was the co-writer and producer and filmmaker, director of Cane River, and Carol Baltazar, who is a native of Cane River, actually decided what they were going to do is make a film about Carol Baltazar's hometown, which was indeed Cane River. Now, Cane River has a very interesting beginning in and of itself. That being said, what happened is that in 1700s, in the late 1700s, there was an African enslaved woman by the name of Maria Therese Quincoin. And she fell in love with a white French gentleman by the name of Claude Thomas Pierre Matoya. But, you know, this is during the time of slavery, and you're living in this time called the Black Code, which was Le Code Noir. So they couldn't get married or anything, but they did reside as a couple. Maria Therese Quincoin actually had 10 children for Pierre Matoya. Now let's jump ahead in time. And by jumping ahead in time, we find that there's a descendant of Maria Therese Quincoin and Paul and Claude Thomas Matoya, a descendant by the name of Peter. Peter then falls in love with a young woman by the name of Maria. The difference is that there is a code there. There's a color barrier there, which a lot of people don't know existed in Louisiana, because it was a given fact that people who were the children of the masters generally had more privileges. They didn't necessarily do field work. And so even as Louisiana was purchased in 1803, the color barrier between the complexions of African Americans became very stark. And what happened is when the Louisiana Purchase happened, a lot of the free people of color were going to lose a lot of the privileges that they once held when Louisiana was owned by France. Now it's owned by the Americans. That being said, a lot of those people fled to this area called Cane River. And generations later, Maria and Peter Matoya meets. But the most interesting story is that actually Cane River is almost three love stories in one. It deals with the history of Maria Therese Quincoin and Paul Claude Matoya, but it also deals with the love story of Horace Jenkins, who is the filmmaker, and Carol Baltazar, who was his love of his life and companion and co-conspirators, we can say, in the makings of this film. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, after making this film, before we even had one screening in New Orleans, Horace died at the age of 42, massive heart attack, and the film just disappeared.
That's one of the wildest parts about this story is that this movie sounds sensational, and it sounds, I mean, it progressive at the time, dealing with issues which are not being presented. I mean, I imagine as an actress, you read the script and you're like, wow, this is pretty sensational. and so you've got this magnificent film. How does it disappear? And tell a little bit about the story of how it was found.
Well, actually, Sandy Schultzberg, along with her team of filmmakers went into the Duarte archives, not archives, let's say warehouse or laboratory. There was a Duart laboratory in New York City. There were over 6,000 films there. And so these are like abandoned films, films that went unclaimed, unseen, unknown. And so she, along with some other people, selected about 4,500 of these films. Now, moving, skipping ahead all the way to L.A., Ed Carter, is it Carter? I think it is. Ed Carter, who is the curator of the Academy of Ocean Arts and Pictures and Sciences, actually labeled and tagged Cane River as one of the films for possible restoration by with the Academy, collaborating with indie films. And together, they then redid the film and digitized it to bring it up to modern time, mm-hmm. up to 4K. And so this is what is being shown at the Walker tomorrow. It's really, and this film was found in 2015.
Yeah.
So imagine that. You're talking about a film that was lay dormant for close to 38 years.
And that when they found the editor, that's when really things, I think, you know, things clicked about what the importance of this and the uniqueness of this. They did restore it. Cane River, directed by Horace Jenkins. It is tomorrow night, 7 p.m., and there's going to be a post-screening conversation with many people, correct?
Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, and let me, because this is Minnesota, and so know this. That last night, for example, we had another screening, and Keith Ellison was there, your
Attorney General.
He is a direct descendant of Maria Therese Coincoin and Paul Thomas Pierre Matoya.
Wow.
He will also be there. He was on stage with us yesterday, so was his mother, and took us back, really, 6, 7, 8 generations. To bring this story to light. It's a wonderful love story. It deals with the color differences that lies within the African-American community, even today.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, but that was the deal, divide and conquer, you know? Mm. And so as long as you can push one sector of people this way and another sector this way, then you will not have that unity of force that you would have if you were just one people. So
Tommy,
we are very grateful to Sandra, I should say, and very Schutzberg, and very grateful to Indie Collect, as well as the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, for finally bringing this film to light. I have to say,
yeah.
I saw the film for the first time in 36 years
in
October.
And Tommy, I got to stop there because we're at the end of the show. Do me a favor. Promise me you'll come back.
I will.
All right. I would love to have you back. Tommy Jenkins, once again, she stars in Cane River, the restored version of that, tomorrow night, 7 p.m., a phenomenal story. As you can tell, I wish we could talk about this for a few more hours. Tommy, thank you very much. All my best on this.
Thank you so much, and I hope to see you there.
All right. Take care. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.